Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Discover the world's leading brands at bionic.radio.
This is exciting. We're at a new venue. We're at Guilt Free Studios in London's fashionable Soho, and very nice they are too. Well, we're in one of them. It's the October Roundtable, and let's see who is round it.
My name's Matt Hill. I am the host. I'm the head of Rethink Audio podcast company and also the co-founder of the British Podcast Awards.
And you have some news, which we'll come to in a minute because it's exciting.
And I'm Adam Bowie. I'm a business development manager with the BBC World Service.
I'm Adam Utman. I am the director of content for a brand new company called Listen.
And when we booked you, you were director of content for Wise Buddha.
I was indeed.
What's happened? Because Mark Goody is still your chairman.
Mark is indeed still our chairman. A very long story short is that we have seen clearly the potential and where audio is headed in the last couple of years. It's just exploded. Such an exciting time for audio. We as a company, as Wise Buddha, our previous company, have been making predominantly radio programmes for 25 years. And we've seen this opportunity to reinvent ourselves and effectively launch a brand new company that makes both radio programmes, quality radio programmes for the BBC and commercial radio, but also build on our ever-growing podcast portfolio and work for a wide variety of clients. So we've effectively bought the business of Wise Buddha as a new management team. Mark is, as you said, Trevor, still our chairman, and all the team have come with us to launch this brand new, shiny, sparkly company, which we're very excited about. It gave me a great sense of pride when we saw yesterday, on Monday, the old artwork from the building on Great Ditchfield Street being stripped away with the new Listen logos.
How exciting.
Put in their place.
So well, it's a new beginning. Every success with that, Adam.
Thank you.
This is going to be the usual format. We're going to hear what our guests have been listening to, and we'll have a chat about some of the other issues that have emerged. But first, I just want to actually pick up what Adam was saying about how exciting audio is and play you a little clip. Audio, radio, it is the best medium. We all know that. But we have scientific proof of why. I went to do an interview last week for a show I'm doing for Radio 4 with a guy called Michael Prue, who's a psychologist at the University of Bath. And I'm just going to play you a little clip of him talking about audio. Why do you think that audio remains such a powerful medium?
I think powerful is the right word, because if we just think about it in terms of how we pay attention to different forms of information, vision is very much an active sense, because if I don't want to see something, a scary film or something like that, I can close my eyes. But with hearing, even if you cover your ears, you can't completely block everything out. The things you hear in the environment are constantly redirecting you through sound. And it's something that we always receive and always respond to. And so I think when it comes to listening to things like podcasts or, you know, radio in any form, it still has that powerful experience of giving you a sense of being there, which watching a video on a flat screen doesn't necessarily give you. Definitely a lot of research has shown that if you look at brain scans while people are shifting attention between the different senses, you'll see like the visual part of the brain sort of go down in its energy levels, you know, how much blood is going to that region in order to put all that important oxygen in the auditory areas of the brain, because that's where you need to process more. And so you can't just keep increasing every area and pay attention to everything. And so if you really want to focus on something and enjoy it, closing out the other senses is a great way to do that.
So, Matt Hill, how's the oxygen in your auditory areas?
Yeah, I would say pretty good. That's why I'm in this industry. I love that hit. I'm not sure it's connected to endorphins, but at the same time, I think for me, they feel very much the same thing. For me, the idea of, and it was said really eloquently there, but the idea of being able to tap into someone's mind's eye is very much the point of what we do in radio and audio generally. We're trying to make people visualise something, whether it's something that's happening in the studio, something, a story, or taking people into a place, into someone else's shoes. If you can do that in everything that you do in the first 2 minutes in the full run of the programme, I think that's basically the only thing you need to do as a producer, is create those visual moments in people's mind's eyes.
Adam Bowie, you spend a lot of time looking at audience figures. Mm. I wonder if there is any evidence yet that the drift of young people away from audio has actually been reversed?
Yeah, I don't know necessarily. I'm not sure that people drifted. There's so many other things going on, and you know, there's audio elements to everything. I mean, one of the things I was thinking when I was listening to that was actually when, say, a local cinema upgrades its kit, you might get excited initially by the picture element, but actually it's the spectacular sound system that they've put in, the sort of Dolby Atmos or whatever, and the surround sound. And I think, you know, with young people, you know, you don't underestimate how much importance goes on in, you know, audio in games, for example, which is a massive part of the business. You know, audio is clearly one of our primary senses, and, you know, whether I couldn't give you any definite numbers on that, but I think, you know, there are importance of audio remains massively significant. I think we've seen that. I mean, you know, even things like, you know, Bluetooth headphones and things like that, you know, they are the must-have gadget at the moment, really.
And Adam, other Adam, I guess you wouldn't be launching your new company if you didn't have a lot of faith in this. What's the evidence from your perspective that corporate entities, advertisers, marketers are just more interested in audio than they were a few years ago?
You're absolutely right to point that out. We have doubled down on audio effectively. When other companies, for their own good reasons, are going off in other directions whilst also still doing audio, we believe there's more than enough want for podcasts and audio on demand generally from the general market. And I think, Matt, you may agree that we're possibly 3 years or so behind the US market.
Yeah.
But we are, I think, catching up quite quickly. Certainly at what is now called Listen, we've been receiving so many more phone calls from potential clients looking to make podcasts to get into that market. And that's branded company. That's big brands. And that's talent. Every piece of talent wants a podcast and wants to have their own audio product because they know how powerful it is. They'll have their own research that they're looking at that says if you spend money in this area, the levels of engagement are higher. There's loads of research that says that. So I find that really exciting. We've got a little
James
way to go.
James Cridland tweeted out a thing the other day, an article, and I'm not sure where it came from, but it was basically about don't do podcasting unless you like doing it because you won't make any money. And the parallel was you wouldn't pick up a guitar just to be a rock star and be famous and rich. You would pick the guitar up because you wanted to play that instrument. Matt, do you think that we're beginning now to see that there is actually a business, a livelihood in podcasting?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's been a livelihood for certain types of podcasts for a good 5-6 years now in this country. But to close that gap with America, the thing that really needs to happen is to convince advertisers that this is a valid medium, that the stats hold up and the engagement is far better than you can get in other mediums in terms of get advertisers' key messages across. Now, I think later this week, there's the podcast upfronts, the first time we've done that in the UK. And that's companies like Acast and Audio Boom selling their stall to big media agencies, big media buyers, showcasing some of their best acts and really just showing the kind of power of engagement, playing adverts, playing reads that you can come from, host-read stuff, the kind of things you can't necessarily get away with in broadcast for regulatory reasons, but that can be used in that within ASA's guidelines, you can do in podcasting. And so that upfront, I think, will hopefully start to change the way that advertisers see podcasting and audio in general.
Well, now, talking of money and online audio, now's the time you can make your announcement, Matt Hill.
Yeah, so the British Podcast Awards, which has been going for about 4 years with my colleague Matt Deegan of Fun Kids Radio and Folder Media, we have been sort of just doing a kind of one-off ceremony every year to showcase basically an old-fashioned discovery tool for the industry to showcase the best podcasts of the last year. But we've been looking to see how we can support a huge range of other initiatives throughout the year. And so on Monday, 7th of October, we'll be launching the BPA Fund, which is a grant-giving body that will be supplying cash to podcasts in certain areas. So we're starting off with something called the Pulse Award, which is a collaboration with the Wellcome Trust. We'll be giving out grants of up to £5,000 to about 10 podcasts, so about £50,000 in total, which will look at health and well-being and the latest scientific research. So podcasters, you know their audiences really well. There's great data now on sort of breakdowns of gender and age and locality. And so the idea is to use the kind of the heft of the Wellcome's finances to really try and engage small audiences, big audiences, but really clear, highly targeted audiences.
And this is 50 grand.
50 grand in total, yeah.
There are people switching off this podcast already looking for your website so they can make that bid.
Yeah, but the idea of it, of course, is to make sure that, you know, the right project and the right type of scientific engagement is for the right audience. So whether you're doing an LGBTQ plus podcast and you want to talk about sort of engaging gay elders with, you know, sort of like their local health centres, or whether you're like a upbeat panel show and you want to kind of have more science communicators on your programme, this grant should allow you to find the time, the money, the equipment to be able to enhance this podcast and make them more rigorous in their scientific approach.
Details where?
fund.britishpodcastawards.com.
Let's go and talk about radio, that slightly old-fashioned thing. Adam, as we've got you here, and you are one of the great bloggers and analysts of audience figures, what's the lesson we've learned from the first few months after that great upheaval of earlier this year, the arrival of new breakfast shows, Chris Evans, Zoe Ball, the launch of Scala and many other radio stations? What's been happening in the radio market?
Yeah, I think there has been definitely a change, and these changes don't happen as fast as you sometimes expect. So, say we look at Radio 2, Zoe Ball and her first Rajar, there was basically no change and it was flat. And then the more recent one, we saw her audience drop about a million or so. And that's actually probably not surprising. It takes people a while to get used to things. I don't think Radio 2 will be too worried about that. I suspect some of that audience will drift back, because it's not like it's gone to one other place. You know, again, you look at what happened with Virgin and Chris Evans. They're about 1.1 million thereabouts now across the various digital Virgin services. And what's clear is they haven't just taken all that audience straight from Radio 2. There has been a bit of a change around. I think Virgin, they might be getting a little bit edgy. They've got this obviously interesting model that they're not running ads on Chris Evans, which makes it hard. Obviously, Sky are giving them a good wedge of money, but how long that will continue is not really too clear. And I think the sums don't particularly add up at the moment. I think they need to, you know, push forward a bit more and give that show a bit more traction. I don't think necessarily it's the show, but I think it's people discovering it and finding it. Scala's another interesting one. We've only had one Rajar. I think Bow might be a bit disappointed with that. It wasn't enormous, or a bit over a quarter of a million or so. And in Scala's wake, there's been a whole bunch of news services launching, both from Global. Bauer has launched a few of its own as well. So it's going to be kind of hard for them to cut through. Interestingly, both those the new Evans show, well, actually all three of those, it's not for want of marketing. They all got good marketing pushes at the start. Sometimes it's continuing that marketing. Virgin has the fortune to be owned by News UK, which means they can put some ads in some of the papers. Although I've got to say, I think maybe freshening up some of that copy would be my suggestion. But
Free consultancy for you.
Just saying who's on the show next week. Because the one thing Evan still gets is amazing guests. And I think tell people about that and tell people, you know, I've got these people coming up. I know you don't always know that stuff up front. But
what's the rationale for launching a full service station like Scala when you can just launch a radio station now that doesn't have any people on it at all?
I think people still want, you know, in which case, you know, are you Spotify or are you a radio station is really what you're saying. And some people, a lot of people, you know, they're finding they're only listening to a lot of music on streaming services, and maybe they are leaving radio behind to an extent. But you're talking about personalities, you know, someone like Simon Mayer, they've got one of the biggest, you know, one of the most popular, most loved presenters in the country. So you want to utilize that. And when you're talking about something that not everyone is super confident about the music, you need a helping hand to guide you through it, I think, a little bit. It's trying to deliver something a bit different, because I think if you just do a playlist and you're ad-supported, you are fighting against a algorithmic playlist that Google or Spotify can do.
Other Adam, have any of these new services tempted you this year?
Generally, what I'm finding is radio. I mean, radio has always been exciting. It's never gone away. It's not going away, for the record. But I think radio's got more exciting again. Every one of these presenters you just mentioned, Adam, is a big personality. The fact that Chris Evans went across to Virgin is a huge thing for radio and has worked for them. Zoe is a fantastic broadcaster. Simon Mayo, you rightly point out, is one of the best. Scala's doing something completely different. And that's exciting, because radio, at some point in the past, definitely did get quite bland and homogenised. And
well,
I think
we were
right
told,
the other side.
We were told to be bland, weren't we, by a lot of Australian consultants who said, just do the same thing all day long and then you'll get lots of listeners. But
yeah,
it turns out people quite like a bit of variety.
Well, they do, but I think that was the strategy pre the likes of Spotify and Apple, where you couldn't just go to that music streaming service and get a playlist about based on the music that you like. Radio clearly now has to be so much more than just that. And that's, I think, where we've got to. There's proper investment going into not just BBC radio, but also commercial radio, because, you know, the commercial industry has realised that to survive and to grow, you need to properly invest. You've got to spend the money. You've got to bring in big talent and create really strong brands that work across the country and stand for something very clear. And whilst there's clearly a bit of way to go, we're past a point where every radio station sounds the same. And in markets that I've worked on in the past, we've had that problem. You start playing a certain type of music and your competitor radio station just follows you, and everyone ends up converging in the middle. And I think it's got clear stations with clear identities. Just going to make sure that they have personality throughout. Personality comes through clear music identity, but also the presenters.
What's the rationale, if there is one, for a station like Radio 4, when you can aggregate your own radio station by choosing the podcasts that you like?
Well, I think it comes back to Lord Reith, doesn't it? You just
Let's
need
hope
to,
so,
yeah,
everyone.
Always, yeah. Well, it has to, the original consultant. No, it has to be that you have to be surprised, educated, entertained by the next thing. You don't know what's coming up, and we're still not at that place in any major algorithm at the moment. Still cannot supply that surprise in quite the same way as human curation. And there are so few like schedulers and commissioners left at places like Radio 4 now that you kind of feel like that, you know, they're working very hard to curate that for us in a way that those algorithms can't. But I am absolutely loving this change of breakfast shows. The change of people in the chairs is fantastic, and I have been very disloyal to all the shows I used to listen to. I mean, flicking between channels, I wake up in the morning and I will flick on, you know, whatever the station is. They've got to really challenge me now to stay on that channel, because I've got the preset set lined up, or I can ask Google Home to change it. You know, it's so easy to do, and that I think we've broken through for at least a little while now, that idea that you just stay on the same radio station all day. And actually the breakfast shows, because they all change at the same time, whatever you flick onto that morning may be the thing you stay with for the rest of the day.
It's the Radio Today Roundtable for October. We're at Guilt Free in Soho, and we have an advertisement.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
Matt Hill is here, so is Adam Uteman, and so is Adam Bowie. Adam, what's gone wrong with my Alexa box? Why won't she play the BBC this morning?
Ooh, I don't know. Did it, my Alexa woke me up to Radio 4, so I'm not quite
well,
sure
I
what
said,
happened with yours.
I'm not going to say it, but I said, hey, A word, play radio, whatever it was.
Which A word was that? Sorry.
And what I got was some NPR station from Philadelphia.
So did I, Trevor. So did I. And I thought that was just me.
I think, is it today, October the 1st, that the BBC has taken itself off tuning?
Possibly that's related. I don't know.
Well, Adam and I have both had to go somewhere else. Where did you go?
I managed to get there in the end by going into my Sonos app rather than asking Alexa to do it. Well, it was an Alexa thing. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it did play me a random station that was not the Radio 2 I was asking for. So I thought, this feels like Radio 2 from 20 years ago. I thought things were different
now. Oh, it's BBC local radio.
And then I realised it was, I don't know what it was, it was just something completely different.
I think you need to get the BBC skill on your Alexa.
Now, it's that's easier to say than do, Adam.
Open the Alexa app on your mobile phone and search BBC.
Search BBC. And then?
And then you enable the app.
You can sign in. The first thing you do is you get a load of reviews of it, which give it one star, which is not a promising beginning.
I'm not here to either defend or support the stuff. I'm just telling you how it works.
Okay.
Is this like this strategy of the BBC? Is it connected to what's happening with Google Home and podcasts? Because so, that still doesn't work.
As far as I'm aware, they're different things. So neither of these fall within my purview because it's actually a UK only situation, and my remit is ex-UK. But as far as I'm aware, the tune-in issue was to do with data and the BBC not getting data. I think that's sort of out there. The Google podcast one is also a data-related thing, but I understand discussions are ongoing there, so hopefully we'll get something sorted in there.
While we're talking about the BBC, what's going on at Five Live? Has anybody got any views? Well, I know you've got views because we were talking about it before we came in. Matt Hill, you can say what you like.
Well, I really wanted to talk about, this is going to be one of my selections for audio recommendations for this week.
Oh, well, let's do it now then.
Well, why not? So I have been really enjoying Ellis, James and John Robbins on Five Live, more so than I suspect Five Live's management have been in the weeks since they launched. If you listen to any of their old shows on Catch Up, they do basically everything they're not meant to do as presenters on the BBC. They name check products. I think John names his upcoming comedy tour several times in a way which I'm pretty sure is not meant to happen. They talk about their previous station, Radio X, almost encourage people to go and check out their past programmes on there. And then they even at some point were sort of telling their listeners, if they don't like us, they're reading out bad tweets, you know, that they've had on air live, but said, if you don't like us, go to LBC. And I can just imagine the management upstairs, like, pulling whatever hair they had left out. But that whole afternoon shift, you know, with Kermode and Mayo going slightly later to make room for them, to make it a kind of an entertainment, start your weekend early kind of feel. This might be controversial. I really love it. And I really love it so much that I've recently become a dad again. So I've got two kids and I've gone down to 4 days a week. And when it was trying to work out what day of the week I should take off, I've made it Friday and I can't pretend it's because I actually quite like Five Live in the afternoon.
You're bringing these children up as Five Live listeners.
Yeah, well,
they'll be pleased with that because they are looking for a younger audience.
Yeah,
that is evident.
Yeah, well, my 38-year-old self agrees.
Good. Okay, here's a clip.
Emily?
Yeah?
Could you give us some slang terms that me and Ellis can learn, please?
Okay.
But do bear in mind you are on the radio.
Yes, nothing
swearing. Of course. So I work in a school, and if someone is ugly, back in my day it used to be butters, but these days...
Whoa. Back up. Back in your day, today is your day. Do you not understand that?
You're in the prime of life.
Don't tell me that you had a your day.
So a few years ago, you would say that someone is butters.
Butters.
But nowadays, the kids say that they are clapped.
Clapped. Like at the end of a play.
Clapped out.
Yeah, you clap, but they are clapped.
But I thought, and, you know, if my generation has a legacy to bequeath to yours, it's that we wouldn't be calling people ugly anymore because we're all being very body positive.
That's what I would like. I work in a school, so I try and tell them not to say that.
What do you tell them to say? What's a word for someone who's sort of achieving their best?
Oh, just someone that's awesome, I'd just say, congratulations, keep going, you're doing a great job. Be nice to each other, it's important.
Very good.
There's so much negativity in the world right now, we don't need any of that.
I understood all those words.
This is what I thought millennials were like. I thought they were all gender fluid vegans with access to good Wi-Fi.
There's Ellis James and John Robbins.
On Five Live.
On Five Live.
I'm going to come and get a choice from you, Adam Bowie.
Okay.
Something you've been listening to and been entertained by.
So a relatively new podcast is one called Box of Delights, which comes from Julia Rayside, the sort of journalist and presenter. And it's just a very light, frothy 15, 20 minutes where each episode, I was going to say each week, there tends to be one or two a week, she interviews someone and they talk about a bit of TV that made an impact on them and is probably from some years ago. So they had the death of a character in Grange Hill. They had one about a sequence featuring David Walliams from the sitcom Space that just celebrated 20th anniversary. And perhaps the most entertaining one, which I really enjoyed, was an episode of Trouble at Top about Bucks Fizz. And they just talk about it for 20 minutes, play the odd clip. The Twitter feed will point you to the right thing. If you want to, you want to go away and watch it. And I did watch all 50 minutes of that documentary on Bucks Fizz, which somehow I missed first time around. And I urge you to do it. And it's great fun.
I think in summation, he basically tries to steal Bucks Fizz from under Bobby G's nose.
It was quite incredible. I mean, he is clearly a man of great ego, but also very insecure. And I think the way the documentary just lets him hang himself is beautiful. There's this incredible voiceover by Jim Carter, you know, off of Downton Abbey. Just absolutely amazing.
He did all of them, all Jim the Carter.
He was just superb. So lots of gravitas. And he, at one point they talk about David Van Day is wanging on about how, he comes out of this very, very badly, about how he was he studied Shakespeare. He wanted to be a Shakespearean actor. And then Jim Carter just pauses and says, he never played Hamlet. Just like, mwah, oh, that was so sweet. Like, there's a lot of lovely moments of unintentional or intentional humour.
I love the thought of him sort of sexily modifying Shakespeare as well.
And then Desdemona, then Ophelia, like, whips her top off to reveal a skimpy bra. One for the dads.
Alas, poor Yorick holding up a dildo.
That's Julia Rayside. Adam Uteman, your first choice, please.
So, we'll stick with the podcast world. And a brand new podcast that I've been listening to from BBC Sounds is The Missing Crypto Queen.
Ah, yes. Where is she?
Where is she indeed? It's a I mean, for me, it sums up everything I love about podcasting and storytelling. Everyone loves a good true crime story. This one sort of combines it with a tale of fraud. It's a story of scam and fraud, investigating this woman behind what was known as OneCoin, or what is known as OneCoin, a scheme that managed to persuade people around the world to invest millions into this cryptocurrency that so far, and I'm up to episode 3, which is where it's at, doesn't seem to exist. And she's gone missing. There seems to be some kind of mafia link so far. I don't know where that's going to go, but it's just really, really well done.
For people who haven't heard it, and we'll have a clip in a minute, does it also stretch the boundaries of storytelling in the way that podcasting has done? Because I think increasingly I can begin to feel as though I know now whether it's a radio show or a podcast, because the styles are quite different. It's partly that serial thing of being able to say, I'm not sure, whereas on broadcast reportage, you have to say, I know what I'm talking about.
100%. And it's a good example of one of these where it's very clear that they are in the process of telling the story rather than having already told the story and I'm listening to the end result. My understanding is it's being released week by week and they're still recording it, as so many great true crime podcasts are done in the style of that. So I'm hooked because I want to know where it's going to go. And there's one great moment, and it's either episode 1 or 2, where they're realising very early on in the investigation that they didn't see it going this far and it getting this deep and quite scary so quickly, which is amazing to hear that reaction in audio from the team actually telling the story.
Here's a clip.
You need to know how a blockchain works. If you don't know how a blockchain works, you're never investing, you're gambling.
In 2016, after investing 10,000 euros of her own money and encouraging friends and family to invest 250,000 of theirs, OneCoin investor Jen McAdam received an invitation from a stranger on the internet. He claimed to be a good Samaritan, someone who studied OneCoin carefully and wanted to speak to people who'd invested. Reluctantly, Jen agreed.
OneCoin is not a cryptocurrency. There is no blockchain, and I can prove it.
Yes, there's a blockchain, Tim.
I can prove it to you that there's not.
Well, then prove it to me.
I'll fucking prove it.
I have never met anybody like
that. I don't give a shit. It's a fucking scam. It's a fucking scam.
The man was Timothy Curry, a Bitcoin enthusiast and advocate for cryptocurrency adoption. He believed that OneCoin would give cryptocurrencies a bad name and wanted to stop it.
Well, that's Crypto Queen. I asked our new hosts here at Guilt Free if they'd like an advertisement in return for giving us the use of their studio. And they said, no, just waffle and say Guilt Free a lot. So I was hoping that there might be on the sheet of paper a kind of ad that I could read out, but no. So I'll just say Guilt Free again. And they're in Soho and their facilities are rather nice. And there's probably a number somewhere you can ring them on if you want. We're going through our choices. I think it's time for your second choice, Matt Hill.
Yes, so I've gone for The Birthday Game, which is a new quiz show podcast by Richard Osman, made by Remarkable Television. And I've picked it because I'm listening to it at the moment, but also because there aren't really that many quiz show podcasts. And it just seemed to me this whole genre, which does so well in radio, that it just really hasn't taken off in podcasting in quite the same way.
Celebrity panel?
It is celebrity panel. It's all comedians. And it's obviously a feature which you would find on any daytime radio station, I suspect.
Does it have saucy language?
A little. Not much, really. It kind of depends on who's on that week. But really, it's people guessing the age of celebrities. And once you kind of play the game, you know, they play it maybe, I think, 8 times during the course of the podcast. It's more the tangents and the running jokes and Osman's ability to host it like a very smooth professional, which is not entirely, a given in the podcast world, that just kind of makes the whole thing hang together. It's only 5 episodes in, and it might be a completely different show in 50 of them. But right now, it's kind of light, frothy, kind of fun.
All I'm thinking about is that I saw Liam Gallagher in the street last week.
No way.
He walked past my office. I was standing at the window, idly looking out, and it was our office in Covent Garden, and I looked out, and there he was, walking along the street without a care in the world, had some shopping bags.
No.
For the fashion, probably.
Yeah.
He had only one handler, which I thought was very modest of
him. He's got a handler?
Yeah.
Has he?
Well, he had someone with him. I assume it was a...
Yeah, yeah.
Could
yeah,
have been
yeah,
a friend,
yeah,
but...
Of course it's...
Probably someone to keep him off the source.
Be a handler, yeah.
I think he looked like a man of 46.
46?
Yeah, he looked pretty spruce.
Okay. Listen, we've got 49, we've got 48, and we've got 46. What do you think at home? How old is Liam Gallagher this week? Here's the news. I'm giving away points, which is lovely. On the first birthday, it's nice to give away points.
Has someone got it right?
I wouldn't go that far. I would not go that far. At home, you got it right. If you said Liam Gallagher this week is 47 years old.
There's the birthday game. Adam Bowie, your second choice, please.
Okay, so I'm going to stick with a television theme, television on the radio or podcast. And I'm going to talk about the Pilot TV podcast, which is kind of a spin-off from the Empire Film podcast from Empire Magazine. So it comes from Bauer. Pilot TV is a kind of their sort of TV supplement that they bundle with the magazine every couple of months or so. And it's presented by two of the panels from the Empire podcast. It's Terry White and James Dyer, and also Boyd Hilton from Heat magazine and from many appearances in places like Five Live. And really, it's just a way to guide you through the gargantuan amounts of television there are at the moment. I was actually actively looking for a good podcast on television that could tell me about things that are coming up, not just tell me about things that are on Netflix, because I can read those online very easily, but also tell me about what BBC One's got, ITV's got, Channel 4's got. And they talk about new stuff. They talk about the news. It can span on well over an hour. The one interesting thing I find, given that it comes from Bauer, is that there's basically no advertising in it, and I'm not quite sure why they're not doing that, because it feels like a slightly open goal. They have people who can sell audio advertising in that business. I happen to know that. But that aside, they even had their first live event at the recent podcast week in London. And it's just entertainment. I look forward to it on Mondays.
God.
Did you see the slightly weird Line of Duty story?
Oh, it's a really interesting line
of
story. Yeah.
So this is Cressida Dick, who is Britain's most senior police officer, who says the, and I quote, casual and extreme corruption in Line of Duty gave police a bad name. She took Ted to task.
Ooh. But what's brilliant is Jed Mercurio brilliantly, as is his wont quite rightly, tweeted her back about it effectively, saying, you know, well, in fact, there have been some terrible examples of corruption and cover-up. And he talked about the John Charles de Menezes situation when an innocent man was killed, was shot. And he's not taking it lightly, let's put it that way. And I think, fair enough.
He doesn't give a shit, does he?
No,
he
well, but quite rightly, preposterous for her to kind of have a go at any fictional TV drama, taking as its subject police investigating corrupt police, which is clearly a thing that happens, because you can't say there's never been any case of police corruption. It's an idiotic thing for us to say.
She did say, however, that Line of Duty has driven a lot of police recruitment, so I guess it's done that because it makes them all look a bit cool.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I think if all policemen were like Ted Hastings, we would live in a much better society.
That is true.
Final choice for our listening delectation, Adam Ewan.
Well, I have rather shamelessly picked one of our own productions. Shocker, I'm sure people do this every month.
Shameless.
This is a Listen production, but something we're really proud to have made. So you probably are aware that Radio 2 recently did a pop-up station to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the release of the Beatles' Abbey Road. So we made a programme with the musician Tom O'Dell.
He's great, Tom O'Dell.
Yeah, Tom O'Dell, my Beatles. Yeah. He just did this wonderful hour of radio where he talked very, very passionately about what the Beatles meant to him growing up, how it was them that influenced him to get into music, to play that piano that he's so well known for playing, and then just played some amazing music. And it was just a really simple production, but that had passion for one band from a musician that's lived and breathed it at its centre. And actually, Tom's quite new to broadcasting. He's not done radio before. We're in the middle of making a 6-part series with him for Radio 2 for later in the year about his love of the piano. He's quite natural, and it was a good one to do.
Next, I want to play you The Ballad of John and Yoko. Came out in 1969, and it was their last UK number one. So this song I remember hearing when I was about like 14 or 15 or something. And I don't know why, but I just became absolutely obsessed with it. I guess some people listening, parents or children, will maybe recognise that feeling or remember that feeling when you're a kid. You hear a song and then you just want to listen to it over and over and over again. Mine was The Ballad of John and Yoko. But from what I can tell, this song is about John and Yoko's marriage. And there's some references to some of the criticism they were getting. And it mentions their bed-in at the Amsterdam Hilton Hotel. But the thing I really find interesting about this song is actually, amongst the sort of chaos that was going on that I'm sure a lot of you are aware of, with that each member of the Beatles was kind of going their separate ways. Paul McCartney and Lennon were almost going through their own sort of divorce in some ways. That Paul McCartney still helped John record the song. It was in the real latter days of the Beatles, but I think what that reflects is that sort of like brotherly love. And Yoko Ono later said, Paul knew that people were being nasty to John and he just wanted to make it well for him. Paul has a very brotherly side to him, which just sticks the hairs on the back of my neck up. Because it's like, even though they were going through all this stuff, like, Paul was still there for him. He cared for him like a brother. And I just wanted to pull out a comment I found on YouTube, which was the top comment with all the likes on this song. It just said, that's how much of a friend Paul was. Even though he didn't quite agree with the Yoko thing, he still helped John record the song and did the backing vocals. Lennon and McCartney forever.
It's nearly time for us to go, but as always, we'll see if there's any other business. Anything else we feel we should have talked about, Matt, that we haven't?
Only, I was going to say, actually, on the Tom O'Dell thing, actually, we have him on Happy Place podcast in the next, I think it's in a couple of months' time, and he was talking about how much he loved making that piano documentary series. Yeah. And, you know, he just went to visit a Steinway factory, I think, and he just could not stop talking about it. It was amazing.
So, we've got so much audio for that series. Believe me, it's going to be hard to turn it into 6-hour-long parts.
It's a plugger-armour. Adam, you got anything to plug?
No, I haven't got.
What's your favourite cycling podcast?
My favourite cycling podcast, Trevor, would be The Cycling Podcast, which has just
who
been.
Makes that?
Well, I'm one of the producers on the Cycling Podcast. Really? Yes, I'm very. Yeah, don't plug my own work too much. But it has been the World Championships for the last week in Harrogate, and I was up there at the
and
weekend.
And what's your favourite Arsenal podcast?
The Alan Davis podcast.
Ah, the Alan Davis podcast. Well, look, thank you all very much. What did you think of the studio facilities?
Wonderful.
Lovely.
Very good. Well done, Guilt Free. Thanks for having us. We'll see you for the November podcast, not here, but in Salford. That'll be exciting. Back to you, Stu.
We'll look forward to that. Thank you, Trevor and guests. And still to come on the Radio Today programme, more great memories with David Lloyd, James Cridland in a second. But if you make radio, maybe you are a contributor on radio or on a podcast, then you might want to try out something called Clean Feed. If you maybe do a lot of things on the phone and you want to make the quality a bit better, then it's a great way to connect in decent quality just using your browser and an internet connection. As I say, great for radio, great for podcasts, and simple to use. The quality is great and it won't cost you anything to get started. It'll just take 30 seconds to sign up, and within minutes you'll be doing your first live interview or recording for your show or podcast. Find out more about it at cleanfeed.net.
I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. I once sat at the end of a telephone line helping people tune in to their favourite radio station, and wow, was that an eye-opener, because most people don't know the difference between AM and FM, I know, and some sets are marked in such strange ways to make it really hard to tune in. You probably know somebody who's tuned into their favourite radio station and never want you to touch their set in case they lose it forever. Radio is increasingly available everywhere, but we don't appear to be telling people where we are and how to tune in, and I find this really curious. For an FM or AM station, reminding people of the frequency is kind of important. If they forget it, they'll forget how to find you, and that's a bad thing. So, while it might lessen the clutter to just say on FM, as some radio stations do in the UK, LBC, I'm looking at you, it may actively be harming your audience not to give a frequency out. But it's also a good idea to remind people how you can listen on other devices and how, because guess what? Someone might not know you're on a smart speaker or available through the telly or on DAB Plus or a different HD frequency somewhere. Maybe one of those in rotation, maybe alongside the FM frequency, might be a better way to remind listeners that yes, you're available that way too. Every hour would be nice. In my hometown of Brisbane, two large AM stations never mention their frequency. Many never mention that they're available online. None, not one, mentions DAB+. If your listeners don't know they can listen that way, they won't. So we know that keeping things simple works on air. We also know we need to make it simpler to tune in to the radio. One day, we'll put these two useful pieces of knowledge together. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crit.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening. And now on the Radio Today programme, it's David Lloyd.
The start of October is just about the busiest time in the radio calendar, the beginning of that last quarter of the year. So let's race through this week. 22 years ago, the abrupt end of Kiss in Yorkshire and Manchester, and the start of Galaxy there.
Kiss 105 is Yorkshire's biggest new radio station, and 384,000 people have made the switch to Kiss.
Kiss.
Locked into the brand new Galaxy 102 and 105.
11 years ago, the original Virgin Radio from London on AM and DAB was rebranded.
Okay, let's go to the future, the absolute future.
Who's going to be the first to talk?
It's 7:47. The Christian O'Connell Breakfast Show, all over the world,
on Absolute Radio. God, that feels brilliant. There we go. That was the first song you ever heard on Absolute Radio. It is the Beatles, A Day in the Life. And after 8 o'clock, we'll tell you where we're going to be this Thursday, which has got something to do with that fantastic song. We are now Absolute Radio. You can discover more at our website.
45 years ago, Swansea Sound arrived.
The consortium promised to provide a service with something for everyone, including 10% of its total output for the Welsh speaker. The company won its case, and in July last year, the franchise was granted. The company's first task was to decide on a site. They chose Gowerton, and building work started last December, but it had to stop almost as soon as it started. The low-lying site on the common between Gowerton and Gorsynon was flooded for 5 weeks. More problems followed, not the least of them the resignation in June of managing director John Bevan, a Welsh-speaking broadcaster and businessman. There'd been a number of disagreements, and after the resignation came the rumours. Swansea Sound, said some critics, would never get on the air at all, and the most optimistic of them focused that the station would not start broadcasting anywhere near the original target date. All were wrong. At 6:02, on the morning of September the 30th, just 2 days after the builders moved out, Swansea Sound was on the air.
Come on, come on, come on. 2 years ago, Sam and Amy left Gem in the East Midlands for the new Virgin.
I am starting to feel a bit weird, if I'm honest.
I just let it out, babes.
Okay, I'm not gonna let it out, obviously, because I'd get ripped from my. So we've done the breakfast show for 11 and a half years now, but 13 years here at Gem. 13, because Amy and I started on the afternoon show. I've been sat at this desk surrounded by all these buttons, and I still don't know what they do.
I know, that is staggering, for really. 13 years. I probably wouldn't promote that 13 year stuff, because.
But I mean, anyway, look, so this is our final show. We've got just under 2 hours left of it to go. And then, of course, myself, Amy, producer Paul, Dangerous Dave, Katie and our boss, James, are going to head out on the lash all day. That's the plan, isn't it? All day.
Pretty much.
Six of us together.
35 years ago now, Invicta launched in Kent.
Hey, I just must mention, before we have a few more calls, about these jingles. I think they're rather scrumptious. I don't know if you do, but let's just play you another one, and I will explain why they sound so good.
Invicta Sound, the sound of Kent on your radio.
Nice, aren't they? Now, the reason those sound so good is because we hired the entire Moscow Symphony Orchestra.
And 45 years ago, hello to Hallam in Sheffield.
On the subject of Request Part 2, we're doing a programme on Sunday between 12 noon and 2 o'clock in which Roger Moffat will be presenting a request programme. That'll be our main one of the week, or the weekend, if you like. It's a two-hour show. And each night of the week between 12 minutes past 6 and 5 to 7, our nightly request programme. We're not doing requests during the day. We're just sort of getting on with the music, but having a specialised programme in the evening. All right, hope that meets with your approval. And we've got a record from the charts.
Keith Skews in the early days of Hallam. The BBC Third programme came on air this week 73 years ago. Etienne Amiot was part of the launch team.
He said, you know, we are starting very grandly. And we're going to have the Goldberg Variations, and we're going to have Tristan and Isolde. I think we ought to have a laugh at ourselves. And it was he who thought of getting Stephen Potter to write a send-up of the Third.
Here, license number 865432, Mrs. Moss. Is she listening?
Turn up the wireless, Mrs. Moss.
Yes, dear, it is chilly tonight. Let's turn the wireless up a bit. That's right.
Meanwhile, the home service closed 52 years ago.
The time is just now 10 minutes to 12. This is David Dunhill, and this is the end of the home service for today and for all days. In one sense, I suppose, we're like a bride on the eve of her wedding. We go on being the same person, we hope, that we'll never again have the same name. Tomorrow at 6:35 a.m. we become Radio 4.
The first network chart on commercial radio was 35 years ago this week with David Jensen. It was eventually to beat the BBC's audiences.
It's 6:15. This is David Jensen with a network chart and a little verse. From Edinburgh's Radio 4th to Bristol's Radio West, you know it makes sense. This chart is the best.
You're listening to the Network Chart Show, your top 30 made up of sales returns from over 300 shops, along with airplay favourites from independent radio. The biggest, the fastest, the best.
After 16 years in the chair, this week in 2014 saw Peter Allen's last drive show on 5 Live. and a chance to hear bits like this again.
Now for a story that might warm the cockles of even the coldest heart. It involves an elderly couple from Hull who split up after a very bitter divorce 57 years ago, and they just married again. Leslie is 93 year old now. Elsie is 90.
Now, I plucked up courage one night. Well, I said to the daughter, do you think it'd be all right if I rang your mum up?
Yeah.
She said, well, the best way to do it is try her. So I did try her.
Well, I'm really delighted. So, did you have a nice wedding?
Yes.
Good.
Very good. Everything's right back to normal now.
Well, that's great. I wish you a long and happy married life together.
Thank you very much.
Take care of yourselves.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I don't know what the hell that was.
Neither do I.
And 40 years ago this week, Roger Day left Piccadilly in Manchester after launching the station 5.5 years before.
I've just been trying to think, actually, you know, the memories that come back. And, very difficult programme to do, as I'm sure you can imagine. I've had so many good times here. And I hope to have good times in the future. Where I'm going, I don't know yet. I remember reading my horoscope at the beginning of the year, and it said, you'll be changing jobs. And I thought, never, I'll never leave Piccadilly. But things happen, and, well, you have to move on. I can't think of any other radio station that will let you have a last programme, let alone this place, so I thank them for that. I mean, stations just usually fade you out because they don't want you to say anything naughty, not that I would. This is hard to do.
Roger Day. So with the first Radio Times 96 years ago, the official organ of the BBC.
Radio Times, fantastic Radio Times.
Kenny Everett's first Radio 2 show 38 years ago.
This is Cuddly Ken, and I've joined the BBC.
The beginnings of GWR 34 years ago.
We're talking about you on GWR, radio 24 hours a day, every day from Tuesday, October the 1st. Listen, we're talking about you.
Radio Wyvern launching 37 years ago.
Hidden somewhere in the Radio Wyvern area, and that's the whole of the county of Hereford and Worcester, is a special certificate. Find that certificate and you win the Wyvern Treasure Trove. It's worth finding, too.
Why's that?
Because our treasure trove is an absolutely unique plate, decorated with the Wyvern emblem, and designed and specially made for us by raw Worcester porcelain.
And, of course, the BBC Light programme splitting 52 years ago.
From September, the BBC Light programme channel on the medium wave will split from the service on 1500 metres in the long wave band, and with a little help from a lot of the newer DJs on the scene, will provide music all day, going back to the light only for programmes like Saturday Club, Midday Spin, and Housewives Choice Music.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Macassar.